me.
We're closer than pages that stick
and
in a book.
My shadow.
We're closer than ripples that play in a brook.
Strolling
wherever you find him, you find me, just look. Closer than a miser or the bloodhound's Deliza me.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Ezra, having grown in power, leads a mission to break the crew's old friend, Hondo Anaka, out of prison. Meanwhile, Blue has Bando, Grand Admiral Thrawn, a master sexy Imperial strategist, has vowed to dismantle and destroy by loins. I mean the growing rebellion. There will be flying pigs, the rise of the Blackberry, and enter the Blue Husbando. We're talking about Steps into Shadow this week. How you doing, Chris?
Won't be the first flying pig. Well, we had a bouncing pig anyway.
I almost put it into the episode extra notes, but an early script when Hondo's friend dies at the beginning, he said they had a line where he was like, oh yeah, pigs do fly. But they thought that'd be a little bit morbid because he died.
Yeah, that would be fitting with Hondo's sense of humor.
Yeah, I mean, I can see Hondo saying it. So. Yeah. Do you have a good week?
Yeah, so far so good.
That's good.
It's been getting chilly here.
Same here! I'm so excited! It's finally, we went from being 96 degrees on Friday to 79 on Saturday. Because in September, we were in 95, like 90 degrees or higher every day of September except for like 4 days. It was ridiculous and terrible. And we broke like 15 records and it was horrible. And now it's finally fall. And I'm so excited and I can't wait to be a white girl and go get my pumpkin spice latte.
Oh, geez.
So excited.
We're getting
waiting to get paid.
We're getting down in the 40s at night, so I had to bring the house plants back in.
We will be 40s, I think, by the weekend is when we finally hit 40s.
The houseplants got replanted in bigger planters at the beginning of the summer, so they're huge now. They, like, fluffed right up over the summer, so they're taking up more space inside.
I really need to replant one of my plants. I have a little angel plant that my mom got me when I went to college, so 10 years later, it's massive. But he keeps growing out of his pots, and so I got to keep getting bigger pots for Angel, and I need to soon buy him, like, a little cage he can climb up. Yay, it's fall, everybody! I'm so excited!
Hope's got to get an angel cage.
Yes, cage in the angels. And it's almost Halloween, even though this episode might come out after Halloween or the week of Halloween.
Yeah, no, it's going to be in a couple weeks, but... Yeah, no, it'll be before Halloween.
Oh, that's true. We're not too far ahead. So, happy Halloween, everybody! So, you ready to get into this episode?
I am.
Alright. Steps into Shadow is the 38th and 39th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on September 24th, 2016. It was written by Stephen Melching and Matt Michnovitz, and it was directed by Justin Ridge, Bosco Ng, and Mel Zweier. I need to take a sip. I didn't sip for my drink beforehand, and my throat was all like, why are you reading? Because I'm dry. So, some extra information for you. For this season, Dave Filoni stepped down as supervising director, replaced by Justin Ridge. Justin Ridge worked on Avatar The Last Airbender with Dave Filoni, and was an episode director and storyboard artist for both Clone Wars and Rebels, and he is the current supervising director and executive producer of Star Wars Rebels, or sorry, Star Wars Resistance. The only reason I noted this, because it was just for this season that Justin Ridge was supervising director, so I just wanted to see, like, keep an eye out to see if, like, tone or, like, things were kind of different. Or you know, if anything seemed different from the other three seasons. I thought that just might be a cool thing to keep an eye out for. Tom Baker is the voice of the Bindu. He is best known for playing the Fourth Doctor in Doctor Who. Governor Arinda Price, I love her, makes her debut even though she's been mentioned as early as season one. She is voiced by Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. Her other works include Critical Role, Steven Universe, and she voices both Ace Pilot Freya in 4D-M1M in Star Wars Resistance, where she also serves as a voice director for the series. My blue husbando, Grand Admiral Thrawn. Every time I've said his name so far tonight, I've, like, touched my chest and, like, stroked my bosom. Like, Thrawn! bosom strokes. Blue Husbando Grand Admiral Thrawn is voiced by Lars Mikkelsen. He is the brother of Mad Mikkelsen, who played Galen Erso in Rogue One. Lars's other works include BBC Sherlock, House of Cards, and the upcoming show of The Witcher. Just so you know, at the beginning of the season, there's a 6-month time jump between seasons 2 and 3. Everyone got updated character models with changes to their costumes, some more than others. Because for Zeb and Hera, it was just like little tweaks or badges, and then like Ezra, Kanan, and Sabine got full re-renderings.
Ezra got the full pubo treatment.
Yeah, he's taller too. If you look between the two of them, he's much taller. Governor Price and Thrawn mentioned that Thrawn was promoted because of the Battle of Batonn. Just to give a quick refresher course, this battle was covered in the 2015 novel Thrawn. Thrawn had a nemesis named Nightswan, who he tracked to a mining facility. Arinda Price had interest in the same place because her parents lived there. Before the battle, Thrawn met with Nightswan and revealed that Thrawn had infiltrated the Empire for the Chiss Ascendancy. He was there either to strengthen it or destroy it from within. When Nightswan refuses his offer to the Chiss, Thrawn returned to the ship to begin the battle. Meanwhile, Price is on the ground with an ISB agent trying to get her parents out, and they're all in a war zone. And then Price, because the ISB agent doesn't want to bring her parents, shoots the damned guy and murders the ISB agent right there, and she takes her parents. Setting off some detonators on the ground to cover up the fact that she just murdered a man, she sets off some detonators, but the shields over Batonn were still up, and the blast was trapped and killed something crazy like 10,000 people on the ground, including Nightswan. Later on, Thrawn and Colonel Yularen are pissed and know that Price is lying when she said that she didn't do it, but they don't have any proof, so they have no choice but to let her go, even though she committed a war crime.
Oh, they don't care.
Yeah, they do. They cared. Like, they wanted to, stop
Price. Well,
Price,
okay, I can totally see that, yeah.
Yeah, this is Yularen, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, like, they've all, like, Thrawn, Yularen, and Eli all knew that Price did it, but they just, all the proof literally went up in flames. So, because she blew up all the proof, so they have no way to do it, but they all know she's lying. Price then persuaded Thrawn to take credit for the battle and all the killing of the people. And when he did, the Emperor rewarded him with the title of Grand Admiral. And so I'm just pointing this out as a friendly reminder that Arinda Price is a mass murderer, and she's perfectly okay that she killed, like, 10,000 people. She does not mind. I love Arinda. She's a monster. The term Bindu first appeared in the original script for Star Wars as the name of the Jedi Knights. They were called the Jedi Bindu. We mentioned last season that Bindu had been developed early enough in the scripts for the season 2 episode of Mystery of Chopper Base. In the early scripts of that episode, Bindu was vastly bigger, where the rebel base was accidentally built on top of him. They were surprised when they returned and the base was gone because Bindu had moved. The mention of General Dodonna at the end of the episode indicates that the captured Y-Wings were going to Gold Squadron to later be used in episode 4, A New Hope.
There goes one of my notes.
Yep. In Rebels Recon, they talked about how Kanan had separated himself from the Force and was in the dark, like Luke from Last Jedi, and blamed himself for a lot of what happened in the Sith Temple, again like Luke from Last Jedi, cough, cough. And they talked about how the cowboy side of Kanan had taken a back seat, but it will always be a part of him, but he needs to resolve a lot of things from the second season. They talked about Bindu and how, because of the freedom of animation, they're able to explore the Force in a more deeper way. Bindu is a notion that there are much older things in the galaxy. He can see outside of good and evil. He is the balanced duality of the Force. Dave Filoni said, when Jedi talk about prophecies and whatnot, and at the time they were showing a picture of Anakin, everyone talks in terms of balance of the Force, so it's a mistake to think that what you're ultimately trying to do is upend the light or the dark. I want to come back to that. And finally, they talked about how they threw around as early as season one bringing Thrawn into the show. But because the Rebels universe was so small at the time and just on Lothal, Thrawn would have overshadowed the show at the time. So they wanted to grow to where Rebels was, where the Rebels were in such a growing threat that the Empire would have no choice but to respond with Thrawn. One difference between the EU original Thrawn trilogy and the Rebels Thrawn and Rebels Thrawn is that there's less of a mystery around him. He is already an established character in the Empire, so people like Constantine and Kallus know who he is. Okay, I want to go back, because I noted this. So I thought this was a very interesting quote in terms of Tross, with the rise of Skywalker around the corner. So I'm going to reread this Dave Filoni quote again, because I wrote it down verbatim. When the Jedi talk about prophecies and whatnot, while showing an image, when the Jedi talk about prophecies and whatnot, everyone talks in terms of balance of the Force. So it's a mistake to think that what you're ultimately trying to do is upend the light or the dark. I think this is the direction that Tross is going, that they're going to find a way to have Force users that are both light and dark, like Ahsoka and Bindu. These people
The Force has to be balanced in each person instead of having it spread out in light and dark.
Yeah, but that quote right there, like, really stood out to me. Like, I feel like Bindu is what they're trying to get to by... It's not Jedi or Sith. It's not light side or dark. It's both. Like, you're trying to get both. And yeah. I kind of feel like Rebels is setting up a lot of that with, like, Kanan and Ahsoka. I think that's, like, we're seeing here them experimenting with these kind of middle walkers. Even though, like, Kanan's very much a Jedi. But we know that he's not, like, a full Jedi because, like, he has moments of anger. Like, he's in love with Hera. Like, he's not a full Jedi, even though he's a knight. Like, he doesn't practice all their teachings. So I think it's interesting that they've been experimenting with this well before Tross, and this is what they're trying to get to.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff in this is really like sort of like warming you up for stuff you're gonna see in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Implicitly or explicitly.
Yeah,
including
like
what
talking...
you were saying about Kanan earlier on in the notes.
That's what I, because they were talking about Kanan and how he cut himself off in the Force and he blamed himself what happened at the Sith Temple. I was like, that is Luke. Like, he cut himself off in the Force and he blamed himself what happened with Kylo Ren in his school. Like,
yeah, they're foreshadowing The Last Jedi a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that was a really cool, like, connection there. And it also made me go, like, why is it okay that Kanan does this, but it's not okay that Luke does it? And I guess it's because Luke's a favorite character and a good boy or whatever. I don't know, man. Like, I like Luke in The Last Jedi. I think that's the most real he's been. And as I've been reading more and more of the EU, like, good B.O.I. boy Luke is just so boring to me. Because he's just out of constant of, like... Because I'm in Dark Force Rises right now, and he's with Mara, and he's like a little puppy. He's just like, I believe in everything, Mara. And I'm like, you are so boring. Like, there's, like, you're just so one note. He's exactly who he is in the movie, and he's exactly, like, so one note all the way through. So that's why I find The Last Jedi so fascinating, because, like, characters shouldn't be one note all the time. Like, I find him so fascinating that he's a person. He should have these faults. Like, people have faults. He's not a good B.O.I. boy. I don't know. You know who also likes to experiment?
Oh, much experiment Yoda has done.
How you doing, Yoda? Did you have a good week, honey?
Yeah, not bad.
Ooh, Yoda, I saw Hustlers over the weekend. It was real good. It's about a bunch of strippers who take advantage of Wall Street guys, and it's based on a true story. It's really good, guys. Actually, for real, Hustlers was an amazing movie. J-Lo and Constant Wu should get awards for it. Go see it, please. But yeah, I think it's a movie you would like. There's a couple titties in it. Was that you motorboating?
What is motorboat?
I swear you just made a motorboat.
Yoda was space motorboating.
Wouldn't a space motorboat just sound like pew? just like. Chris, I can't believe you just made that sound. That's an amazing sound. All right, Yoda, you ready for your question?
Yes, a question for Yoda you have.
So, and guys, we're always looking for more Yoda questions, so please send them in. I'm kind of like banking them up at the moment, so. But I do have a couple of them. I got to thinking this week, Yoda. If you could, because you've been a Jedi your entire life. You've always been a Jedi for like hundreds and hundreds of years. But if you could have a job that wasn't a Jedi, what would you want to do for a living?
Maybe showbiz? Sitcom. A sitcom Yoda could be. Plays sexy neighbor.
Hey. You could be, what's the neighbor in Three's Company? Well, I guess he's not too sexy.
Yoda knows not what you speak of.
Yoda, you would be a cute girl next door. The sexy girl next door. I guess boy next door.
Sexy Yoda next door.
Okay, so show business, so an actor.
Top show, maybe.
I don't remember what episode it is, but we did hear you sing at some point. I think it was the episode with Sean, wasn't it? Where we had Sean as the guest that you sang?
Singer Yoda is, yes, and Mace Windu is gone now, yes. Nobody to make fun of Yoda's singing?
I also think you would be an amazing talk show host, because I know you just brought that up.
But... use the Force.
Oh, that's my.
Worries Yoda could get.
What would be the name of your talk show? Yodeling with Yoda? No, that's bad.
Yoda All Night?
Yoda Man? I mean, that's like the most obvious one in the book that everybody uses. Yoda Man! Yeah.
Yoda doesn't get it.
You heard it here, Force.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh god, I thought it was too corny. I'm glad you like it. You heard it here, Force, kids. I don't know. But I think out of those three, Yoda, you would make a great talk show host. Like, sitting down with a person, connecting with them on a basis, and then, like, creeping them out in their dressing rooms. I think that's right up your alley.
Better looking than Jay Leno Yoda is.
Bye, Yoda.
Bye, Yoda. All right, you ready to get into this?
I am.
Drink. Here we go. Act 1. 6 months have passed since the events of Season 2. The rebels are settling down in Chopper Base rather nicely. The rebellion is coming along, and with time passing, the space kids are finally taking on more responsibility. Ezra, Sabine, Zeb, and Chopper are on a solo mission. Or actually, Hera's nearby, but they're doing the majority of the mission themselves. I realized that after I wrote that. There we go. Trying to break into prison. Sorry, that one came out of nowhere. They find a particular cell. Sorry, I made myself laugh because I burped. They find a particular cell that they were looking for, and pop open the door to find Hondo Onaka and his piggy partner Turba. And apparently Hondo has some information for the rebels that they need. Or he would if Turba didn't actually have it. They both have it. They need both of them. So now the rebels have to rescue two people. Some stormtroopers show up, and they have to make a break for it. They call on Hera for a pickup as they all cram into the elevator. Sabine hands Hondo a blaster to make himself useful, and Hondo is like, "Yeah, you're never seeing this again." And Sabine is like, "Yeah, I don't need a blaster because I can kill you with my bare hands if you don't give it back." And they get to a lower level where a bunch of stormtroopers are waiting for them. So the blueberry Ezra takes the lead, and he pulls out his lightsaber. And he unleashes the Blackberry. I wish I could do like a metal voice there, like, "Unleashes the Blackberry." There we go. But I don't know if you understood that. Ezra slices through the guys like they're butter. And even Hondo is like, "Oh, damn. Is that Ezra? Shit. Oh, God. Oh, shit. Oh, God. He cut that man in half." And Turbo the Pig is done with all this. And he calls off the deal and runs ahead of everybody. Against all warnings, he sprints out onto the platform, and a walker fires on him, and pigs do fly to their death. Brunch. Cut off and trapped. I'm having a great time tonight. Cut off and trapped, Ezra steps forward, and he uses the Force to take over the mind of the walker pilot. Controlling the guy, Ezra makes the pilot kill all the stormtroopers on the platform before pushing the walker off the side. Zeb, Sabine, and this is really saying something because he has seen some shit. Hondo all look on in horror. And their ride is there as the ghost swoops in. Jumping off the platform, they land on the ship and fly away to safety. On the ship, Hera chews out Ezra for not knowing all the details of the mission and for losing a life with Turba. Ezra snaps back with his teenage rage and he storms out of there. And Hondo looks at Hera and asks, what's with him? And Hera's like, oh, you know, teenage angst and his master got blinded and he does all this weird stuff in his room that we don't really talk about. And Hondo's like, ah, got it. Wash all of his socks very thoroughly. In his room, I like my masturbation joke, shut up. Ezra goes off in a rage that rivals Harry Potter year five. And glowing rises up, and he turns out that he's been hiding the Sith holocron from Malachor in there. Not a Saj voice comes out of the holocron and talks to Ezra about He talked to her about how he was right and everyone else was wrong and it's all stupid. And the Sith voice calls out that she can show him more of the way to power, the way that rocks, and she has all the cookies. Farkin, aka fucking Tarkin, is lounging in his office one day when the door opens. And we've heard about her! They've teased her! And now we're finally getting one of my favorite female villains, maybe in all of Star Wars. I really love this bitch a lot. Fucking badass queen, Governor Arinda Price, walks in the door. Fuck, I love this bitch. And she comes in saying that Lothal, which she's the governor of Lothal, is doing quite well, but she's concerned with the rise of rebel activity going on around her planet. And she wants the Seventh Fleet, because if you read 2015 Thrawn novel, Price has a lot of interest in Thrawn. She might have a boner if you ship it that way. Farkin suggests someone who has dealt with these rebels before. He suggests Admiral Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name. But Constantine clearly hasn't won against these rebels. And Price leans in and goes, I want someone working for me that's smarter, handsome, very blue, has a sexy voice, and he will make all the EU fans go wild. And Farkin gives the okay for her to have the Seventh Fleet. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. Ezra's hit puberty, and now that he doesn't have his stun gun, it's just time to kill people.
I have that note, too. Like, he has a blaster, and I think outside of his staple gun, this is the first time we've seen him with an actual blaster.
And he's just, like, not hesitating and winging stormtroopers off and remote mind controlling people. We've never really seen that in Star Wars too much.
Yeah.
Just taking over someone's mind without like even like talking to them, just like they're sitting in a chair somewhere. And Farkin, those are my only notes. you're getting, like with Pubo Ezra, you're getting a little maybe insight into the Anakin that was maybe before episode 2, Anakin like a couple years before episode 2, hanging out with Obi-Wan, scrawny and whiny.
You're holding me back.
Hitting his growth spurt, eating all the time, popping pimples.
I can just see like Hera just being like, God, between Ezra and Zeb, we have no food. like Hera's trying to do the space shopping. She's like, one of y'all need to get a part-time job because you guys are eating through all the space waffles and Mama needs her Eggos. Because we sure as hell know that space dad's not going out and buying groceries. So.
Yeah, no wonder you got space pimples. You've been putting all the space syrup on your space waffles.
Yeah, and all the extra butter, too, and it gets all, and he's all pimply. The big old pimple. As for my notes, I like.
You should use those scrubbing bubbles outside. They'll take the pimples right off you.
Oh, God, that would burn. Hell, my face just hurt thinking about that. My first note is actually about Ezra's blaster, since I've already mentioned that. I did find that was interesting. And also, Ezra has a new lightsaber, too. And I feel like that's a missing story, because it's clear that Ezra and Kanan haven't really been talking much for the last 6 months. So did Ezra go back to the Lothal Temple on his own and get the... we know that the Empire's there. So, like, where did he get this other kyber crystal to make this new lightsaber? Because maybe Kanan took him, but I actually can't see Kanan taking him to get a new lightsaber. And we know that he can't return to the Lothal Temple because the Empire knows that it's there. So I feel like that's a little story that's missing. That would be very interesting to know. Like, not like I didn't need to see like a full episode of it, but I feel like I wouldn't mind.
It could have been an in-between season short.
Yeah, like an animated short, or even having it like pop up in a book somewhere, or even just a comic. Like that is a missing story here, because I don't, it's not a needed story, but that would be a nice kind of fill-in thing, especially for Ezra's character. Like, if he had to go off, find his own new Jedi temple, and get a kyber crystal all on his own, that would probably say a lot about his feelings with Kanan. I think he would probably want Kanan to go with him. And if Kanan, Kanan could either go or not. And if Kanan went, he wouldn't be very helpful. And I think if Kanan didn't go, it would hurt him more. So I think character-wise, that would be a nice story to know, but it's not needed for plot. Does that make sense?
So, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I like your idea of a short. I think like a little like 10-minute short on YouTube. I think that would have been really nice.
Yeah, just a little goofy adventure, but there are, you know, of them getting a kyber crystal from somewhere.
Yeah, because it's not like he could go to Ahsoka either. She's not there. So my first note is, I really like seeing the space kids with more responsibility for the rebellion. I just wish we got a little bit more set up proper with the space kids, because, and when I mean that, I mean like with the actual rebellion outside of Hera and Kanan, like with other people in the rebellion, because we've only seen Ezra and Sato work together last season, but we haven't seen like Sabine work with other people in the rebellion that's not Hera and Kanan. We haven't seen Zeb work with other people that's not Hera and Kanan. Chopper at least got an adventure with AP5. And so I like that they have this responsibility, but I would have liked to see at least like a little bit more tease last season of them actually like learning the ropes of the rebellion more, instead of just going into it so seamlessly. I think I mentioned that in our season recap last week, that was a thing I wish we saw.
I think I know how to retcon where he got the kyber crystal.
Oh, I would love to hear it.
From one of the lightsabers from the dead Jedi in the Sith Temple. From one of their lightsabers, at some point we did, you know, when we were watching, he just like grabbed a kyber crystal or two.
You know, I don't see that in the episode, but I do see that, like him going back to that, because he would know that there would be lightsabers there.
Well, it got blown up, but I mean, he picked up that one lightsaber and it came on for a second.
Yeah, and it was green. The blade was green, like his new lightsaber.
Maybe he grabbed the kyber crystal out of it.
I don't think he did that, but I could see Malachor being a place that he returned to, because he has a Sith holocron, so I'm sure the Sith holocron was like, you should go back to Malachor and get there's plenty of lightsabers there. Yeah. So
however he got it, he'd have to explain it to Kanan either way. He's not going to build a new lightsaber with Kanan going, oh, you built a new lightsaber? That's cool.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, that could go so many different ways. Like, on one hand, I could see, like, if it's very early on, like, right after Twilight, that they went and did this. It's, like, kind of their first adventure together, and it's just rocky. Like, because they're both blaming themselves, they're both guilty, they're not helping each other, and I could see it being a very rocky experience, and that sets them off a worse path. Or I could see Ezra just going on his own, and Kanan not going with him. I could see that going multiple different ways. And both stories would be equally as interesting for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to have an issue with this episode, but I actually like it a lot more now. And the issue was like teenage angst, Ezra. But I really like this opening scene setting up Ezra and where he is right now. because he's not his happy, like, on one hand, he's still his happy self, and he's joking with Sabine, like, yeah, it's Hondo, it's gonna be great. And you can hear that, you can hear in Sabine's voice when she's talking with Ezra, and he's like, yeah, it's great. Like, Sabine has no trust in any of this. Like, you can hear her doubting him. She's not on board with how he's been acting. And then when it clicks and he turns and we see Ezra just mowing down stormtroopers and then he uses the walker to kill people, like, you see why Sabine is concerned. Like, there's right. not a moment in this opening scene where Sabine sounds like she's happy with Ezra. Everything she says to Ezra is almost snarky, and she doesn't trust him. And then we see visually why. And I really like that mix of Ezra's visually showing what a little tiny monster he's becoming and Sabine's dialogue and actions and their horrified looks watching Ezra kill these people. Like, it's just all done really, really well.
Yeah, and he's just like, what?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great use of Sabine because she's not warm at all towards him. She's very cold to him the entire opening act. And it could be really easy for them to toe that line of him just being bratty teenagers. So I'm glad that they show that he has the holocron, because it doesn't cross the line of bratty teenager. It actually shows, like, he's being corrupted by this thing. Or I guess I shouldn't say corrupted, because Bindu says later that an object can't corrupt a person, but he's being manipulated. And so at least it gives an explanation of why he's acting that way. And I thought that was very interesting. Instead of just making him a bratty teenager because he's mad at the world, there's actually a reason.
Yeah, and we don't know how much he's been up to, too, so that leaves it, like, really even creepier.
Yeah, I mean, it could be... I have a feeling he uses it all the time. Because Ezra's almost like an addict in this. I think I have a note later on that Ezra's like an addict in this episode, because he's like constantly needing, and he wants more power and wants this more power. And then we get to the end of the episode and he doesn't have it anymore. And he looks at Kanan and he's like, where is it? You have it, right? Like, where'd you put it? Like, so I think he's using it constantly and he's almost becoming like an addict.
Callum.
That's a very great example. I think that's a very good example is Gollum. I just had her, right? Arinda, she's my favorite badass bitch. Arinda Price is such a bitch, and I love her so much. I love Arinda Price. I love how she walks. I love how she looks. I love how she talks to people. I love how she don't give a shit that she's a mass murderer. I love Arinda Price. She's just evil to be evil, and I love her. This is what Star Wars needs, I was about to say this is what they need more of, but they have a lot of. But, like, female characters who are just, like, not redeemable. Like, because you got men and, like, all these, like, Tarkin's not redeemable. Vader gets redeemed. Like, but we don't have a lot of, like, women who are just, like, evil to be evil. And she's just a bitch and I love her.
Even Ventress was on the road to redemption.
Yeah, and, like, and the Seventh Sister was so one note. And that, like, I just find Arinda so much more interesting. But yeah, I love Arinda. Back when I used to do Tumblr instant reactions that I'm now doing for Resistance, I can never remember Arinda Price's name, so I would call her Governor Flapper Girl. So Governor Flapper Girl, because her haircut reminded me of a 1920s haircut. So
I knew a girl in college who looked just like her, who went on to become a pet aromatherapist.
No, wait, a pet aromatherapist?
A pet aromatherapist.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I guess it is. I imagine she lives somewhere where there's people with money to burn.
Yeah, that sounds like a money to burn thing.
Yeah.
So if I jokingly call Rinda Governor Flapper Girl, that's why. The only thing is about Rebels. And then I would say that, like, this is kind of, like, a downside of reading all the extra materials, is there's a lot of characters around Thrawn and Arinda that I really love from 2015 Thrawn and from the books. And, like, at this time, I know that Karen Farrow is on the Chimera. Like, she is on that ship with Thrawn. She is his Commodore, and she's there. But we never get to see her, and I want to see, like, Eli Vanzo.
Well, they have the books, Hope.
I know, but I love my Kumbaya Chimera crew. like the Chimera is the Kumbaya crew. Like they all like each other, they all get along, and they're all friends. And I want to see my Kumbaya Chimera crew in animation. Because, like, to me, like, Eli Vanto and Karen Farrow are Rebels characters. They are in the Rebels timeline, and they are Rebels characters to me. And so, like, that's the only downside, because, like, I want to see them in animation so bad. I want to see these characters, and I hate that I never got to see them in animation. But I love the Kumbaya Chimera crew, and I love these characters. And Rebels, Eli and Karen are Rebels characters to me. So.
Every little window you see on a Star Destroyer, they might be looking out. You can just imagine them looking out of a window.
I know, but they were developed after all this, so I know that they're not, but I like to pretend. I'm going to pretend, so. Well, that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
I'm ready for Act 2.
All right. Act 2. Back on Chopper Base, Hondo is trying to haggle for a ship, particularly the Ghost. And they turned down his offer, but if he has good information, then they might compensate him with a non-ghost ship. They did rescue him from Imperial Jail, after all. And Hondo presents his information. Requiem Station, where the Imperials are destroying a bunch of Clone Wars-era Y-Wings. Grunkle Rex is there, and he's like, if it was made during the Clone Wars, it was made during the Clone Wars, and it was bad. Therefore, it's better in quality than anything else we have here. And it turns out, Phoenix Squadron has been trying to put together a strike force team so they can return to Lothal and take out Imperial factories there. These Y-Wings could get them started. They need to scout out the station first and make sure that the intel is good. Commander Sato turns and promotes Ezra to Lieutenant Commander. Grunkle Rex looks on all proud and teary-eyed like... Oh, I remember the day that Ahsoka was promoted to general as a child soldier. It's just like the good old days of children soldiers in the Clone Wars. And Hera congratulates Ezra and tells him that Kanan would be so proud. And Ezra sniffs back going, well, he's never around anymore. And he sulks off. We go to Kanan, sitting outside the base with the little shell creatures crawling all over him. The googly-eyed spiders from Chopper Base episode are just on the outside their line of sensors, taunting Kanan, going, fuck off, human! You killed Spider Steve! We still don't forgive you for Spider Steve's death! And then Kanan hears a voice that's not the spiders going, fuck off! It's a deep voice, sounding like it's far away, and it's kinda timey-wimey. The voice says that it sees Kanan, and for Kanan to come find him. Hera calls to him, hoping that Kanan would have been at the briefing. She says that Ezra blames himself for what happened with Kanan and Ahsoka, and Kanan needs to let Ezra know that he doesn't blame him at all. Kanan goes to Ezra's room to finally talk to him, but Ezra has the Sith holocron out and doesn't want his master to know. So Ezra's like, oh, this is a bad time, Dad. I'm masturbating. I mean, I'm getting ready to lead a mission. I'm really bad at making up excuses. And I just choked on my own spit. There we go. And Kanan's hand brushes up against the Sith holocron before he can actually talk to his Padawan. He's surprised that Ezra has opened it, and that Ezra has been using it. They have a father-son argument about how dangerous this is. Kanan is frightened and he's losing Ezra. And Ezra pulls the ultimate teenage move of, well, I don't need you anymore, Dad. Heartbroken, Kanan takes the holocron and leaves. He hears the voice call to him again, and Kanan picks up a sensor and heads out into the wilderness. Later, Sabine, Ezra, Zeb, and Grunkle Rex and Hondo head out on a mission in the Phantom minivan to go get those Y-Wings. They have to make a separate jump in the Mining Guild territory, but it's no biggie, and they all head off. Man, I love the Phantom minivan. It's such a great little ship. It's so good. And they pop out of hyperspace, and the Mining Guild is there. The kids have to pay a toll and register with the Empire before they can get clearance. And Sabine is like, fuck off! And then guns it and flies away with all the mining ships firing after him. Back with Kanan, he makes it out to a clearing after following a convoy and can sense something there. He calls out hello, and lifting up from the ground rises the Bindu. What'd you think of Act 2?
I've got yay Bindu.
Bindu! I cut it off before, like, their actual conversation, so.
When I was watching this the first time, I thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if those weird structures were actually like some creature? And then he stood up and I was like, yay. I had the same thought the first time I saw Alien 2. And I was like, that sort of looked like the alien's head, that piece of machinery there. And then his arm popped out and I was like, yay. Ezra's doing a little bit of Anakin whining, like crying about, like Anakin used to cry about Obi-Wan about Kanan.
Yeah.
And our scrubbing bubbles friends are back. I like them.
Oh, I forgot you called the little shell folk scrubbing bubbles. I forgot.
That's what I was
about
talking
that.
About. They're probably what's keeping Ezra's acne down.
I forgot about that. Now it makes sense that you were talking about scrubbing bubbles. I forgot.
And my only other note is Jedis don't have to have the puberty talk, the sex talk with their Padawans. They have to have the holocron talk. let me explain to you about the holocron, son. I know, Dad. Jeez. You don't have... Well, here, just read this book about the holocron. Everybody likes to check out a holocron every once in a while, you know? I mean, I used to all the time. Shut up, Dad!
I don't want to know about what you saw in your hologram.
Jeez. Jeez Louise, Dad.
Luckily, I can't see it anymore.
But son, that's all I got for part two.
Son, the greatest thing about being blind, that in my mind, your mom's always naked. Actually, while we're still talking about the holocron, I should go ahead and do my one note. Because I was reading it, and kind of mentioned this just now with Ezra being like an addict, that there's kind of like a real-world coding that could be applied for parenting. Because, actually, for one, Ezra and Kanan's fight really did remind me of like a parent fighting with their teenager, and he is space dad. And if you replace the holocron with anything else like drugs or alcohol, then it's very much a fight from our real world. Like, I kind of felt like I was watching One Day at a Time, like the episode where Penelope finds marijuana in Pepito's room, and she had to have that talk. It was almost verbatim the same talk, only one's about the holocron and one's about drugs. It was very much like a scene from our real world, and that's what I kind of liked about it. And, yeah.
Yeah, instead of a porno magazine, they found a holocron.
Yeah. My next note is, at the beginning, I know you haven't read Pirate's Price, but, Pirate's Price is a book about Hondo, and it's told from Hondo's point of view, first person. I've talked about it on the show before. Highly recommend the audiobook. But it just, when Hondo was haggling for the ghost, it just reminded me a lot of Pirate's Price, because in that book, he's haggling for the Millennium Falcon, so that was nice. I like that kind of connection, because it was very similar. Ezra gets promoted to being a military leader, and he's like 16 at this time. It's Clone Wars Padawan child soldiers all over again, and Rex looks so proud. It's all terrible. It's so terrible that these kids are having to fight these fucking wars.
That's how it always is. So
I know.
Always fights wars.
Like, I actually kind of would have liked it if when Ezra got promoted, instead of Rex looking proud, Rex looking a little horrified, because he's been through this with Ahsoka, and I thought it would have been really interesting if, like, Rex was on the fence about it. Like, I've been through this once. I lost Ahsoka. I watched her walk away. I watched what this do to her. And to me, that would make sense for the rest of the episode, too, with Rex's story, because then it would make sense why Rex is really trying to guide Ezra for the rest of the episode if he was horrified in this moment that he's reliving.
Ahsoka walked away during certain situation, though, you know.
But it's like he went through six seasons of watching a 16-year-old fight in a war. Padawan having to fight in a war and failing and losing men, and he watched what it did to her. And
he's younger than her.
He might be older. He was 10 when he was commissioned. Yeah, he is younger than her. But the thing is like, I would much rather have Rex be horrified in that moment than be proud, because he's already watched this happen to Ahsoka and he saw what it did to her. And it would make more sense why Rex is trying so hard to guide Ezra through the rest of the episode, because he's already lived through this once and I could see him not want to go through this again. I thought that would have been a much stronger choice. My next note is, I'm a sucker for a nice beard, so I love Kanan's new look. I love a nice beard. Ugh. I love him. I love a really great beard. And I love his new look so much. And then when you get a good, not like a gross beard, like a well-kept beard that's like properly like moisturized, and you just touch it, you just rub.
Properly moisturized beard.
You should moisturize your beards. I mean, listen to Jonathan Van Ness. Like, beards should not be dry. They should be like soft. So they should be soft to the touch, not crinkly. You have to moisturize your beard. It's like you would do with any, like, you would put conditioner in your hair. So why not? Would you not condition your beard? But like a good beard, like when you can like put your palms on it and just like rub it. I love a good beard. I mentioned this up above. Kanan reminds me a lot of Luke from The Last Jedi. He's cut off from the Force, struggling with his past trauma and loss, blaming himself for mistakes. And then it hit me that Kanan must be really cut off from the Force, because he did not sense that holocron in Ezra's room. It wasn't until his hand brushed it that he realized it was there. And I went, wow, Kanan's really cut off from the Force if he did not know that thing was there. Because I'm
not
sure
enough
that
the Bendu still couldn't get a hold of him, but yeah.
Because I'm sure that Sith holocron puts off a lot of bad juju that he would normally be able to sense. So
you'd think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was the moment I was like, wow, Kanan is really, really deep inside himself. I do like that there's a time jump, specifically when it comes to Kanan and Ezra's relationship. Kanan is definitely depressed, and he's definitely going through some PTSD right now. And I think it's just all very well done. Because, like, we don't need all, like, every day of those 6 months. But you can tell that there's a lot of time where, like, Ezra did try to go to him. And maybe it was, like, the lightsaber thing. Like, Ezra tried to go to him and Kanan didn't respond. And so I think the time jump is really nice to, like, not have to delve deep into what happened in that 6 months. But they show it really well here to where we don't need to know what happened because we can just assume. It's really well done.
You know, all you need to know about the time jump is just seeing Ezra. You see the growth, about a 6 month growth spurt.
Yeah, and his personality has changed, and Kanan is not cowboying it up. Like, there's, yeah, it's all visually really well done. And my last note is, I remember the first time I ever saw the Bendu, and I was like, what are you? I love you. You are wonderful. That was my first response. I was like, what are you? So.
Yeah, our first Time Lord character.
He's a timey-wimey. He is timey-wimey. He's old.
He's kind of like a Time Lord, yeah. It's very appropriate that Tom Baker is his voice.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
All right, Act 3. The space kids with Rex and Hondo are running for their lives from the Mining Guild. But Sabine does some fancy flying and gets rid of the two TIE fighters. Ezra doesn't want any witnesses, so he wants to take out the rest of the Mining Guild's transmitters. Sabine points out that that's not their mission, and Rex confirms and suggests Ezra listens to Sabine on this one. Ezra gives in, and they jump to hyperspace. Meanwhile, the Bendu is looking at Kanan going, whoa, buddy! You're, like, so imbalanced that you woke my old ass up. You're like a hurricane of fields right now, man. And Kanan realizes that Bendu is a Force wielder. And Bendu is like, nah, my dude. I'm no Jedi or Sith with her dumb ways. I'm the Bendu, the middle. And I just am, man. Now, what seems to be the problem? Talk to old dude Bendu. That's my best dude impression, I'm sorry. Kanan pulls out the Sith holocron, and Bendu floats it up to him and opens it with no problem, going, oh, this is a cute little toy. What's the problem with this thing? And Kanan explains that he's scared the Sith holocron is making Ezra turn evil. And Bendu explains that an object cannot change a person. Ezra's changing because he wants to. And Bendu sees through Kanan's bullshit and points out that Kanan's scared of his own change. Reaching down, Bendu breaks the sensor that keeps the googly-eyed spitters back. And Kanan starts to panic because he doesn't feel safe anymore with spiders around. And the spiders start coming in there like, vengeance for Spider Steve! And Bendu offers to teach Kanan how to properly see with the Force if he's willing. And Kanan accepts. back with the Imperials. You better... I hate that they haven't released the Season 3 or 4 soundtrack, because I want this music so bad. I want Thrawn's music so bad. Back with the Imperials, Farkan, Constantine King, and Alexander Kallus are all meeting together. And Constantine is like, "Piff! Governor Price is a lady and dumb. And we don't need the 7th Fleet as long as I'm here." "Oh, really?" a voice calls out of the darkness. And out walks with Price, my lovely, wonderful, blue husbando, Grand Admiral Thrawn. And Constantine is like, "What? You outrank me now?" And Thrawn is like, "Yeah, it wasn't hard. You're not very good at your job." And Kallus points out that a lot of civilians died at the Battle of Batone, where Thrawn got promoted. And Governor Price is like, "It was fine. I certainly didn't kill like 10,000 people. Nope, it's not. It's fine." And Farkin's like, "Guys, whatever. Thrawn, can you help us?" And Thrawn pulls up a bunch of data. Stink Eyes Constantine points out that Hondo's escaped. They report from the Mining Guild, and Hondo's cellmate used to work at Requiem Station. And he's like, "Yeah, you dumbasses, they're going there. Let's start there. And I'm just going to do all your guys' job. Peace out." And Thrawn drops the mic and leaves. What'd you think of Act 3?
Not bad. Anakin's going, Ezra's going full Anakin.
I'm in a rage.
Being an aggressive, angry Ute. Thrawn is a total, like, Disney villain. He's just given just, like, the stereotype scary Thrawn 101 entrance where he's just like, "Ah, blah, 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 I'm Thrawn, and now we shall catch them and crush them." And his voice, and I noticed this, his voice is very, like, Disney bad guy.
It makes my uterus jiggle.
And, but now we got all the heavies in one room now.
Mm-hmm.
All hanging out together. And did Bendu mention something about the Bogan, right?
The Bogan and the Ashla, yeah.
Yeah, and I think those were originally, like, from the original Star Wars story.
They were the light and the dark side.
Yeah.
I saw that in the extra information notes, but I think I wrote that for Legend of the Little Sats or something.
Yeah, we talked about that a few episodes ago, yeah.
Yeah, I just chose not to repeat it.
But that's all I got.
So, for my notes, I can't remember if there was ever a time in Clone Wars, and I wanted to ask you about this. Do you remember ever a time where Rex and Hondo were in the same room?
No.
I don't think they ever were either. And only just because, like, I think it'd be really cool, even if it was, like, a 10-second scene of them in the backseat, of them just chatting about the Clone Wars. Like, if Hondo was just like, "Oh, I love working with Jedi," and Rex is like, "You work with Jedi," and he's like, "Oh, yes, Kenobi," and Rex being like, "Oh, I knew Kenobi," and that's it, just 10 seconds. Because you have, like, two Clone Wars characters together, and I think it'd been, like, really cool just to have, like, even if it was just, like, a background.
Well, if I were Hondo, I'd try to be enlisting him. I'd be like, "Hey, you know, you clones are pretty good. You should come work with me."
Yeah, yeah. Just, like... Because, like, when you have two Clone Wars, even if it was just background chatter of, like, the shot panning by them and they're talking about Clone Wars, I just thought that'd be, like, a nice touch. Like, kind of like I mentioned last act, I like that Rex is there to mentor Ezra. Because this isn't his first rodeo with a young Padawan in power that he's dealt with. And I think Rex is a very good choice because with Kanan so distant lately... Rex is the best choice. He has the most experience more than anybody else of working with Padawans. And so I think Rex is a very good choice to be there because he's done this before. And if Kanan's not going to be there, and we've seen him actually last season mentoring Ezra. So I think Rex is a very good choice to be on this mission because he's dealt with this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
Oh, hey! I have the same note. I forgot this. It's a nice little piece of writing that Bindu called The Light Side and the Dark Side by Ashla and Bogan. Look at that. I forgot I wrote that down. Anyway.
I wrote,
it's a cool thing to show that Bindu predates anything known about the Force. So he probably predates Sith and Jedi.
Yeah.
So, I love how the Bindu opens the holocron with no problem. He's like, this is a neat toy, whatever.
I was just waiting for him to eat it like a snack.
Cause I love that scene because like Kanan's like, be careful, it's, and he opens it and he's like, it's dangerous. And Bindu's like, right. He's such a Bindu's like a borderline troll because like these things that are like scary like to Kanan are just like nothing to Bindu. Like this holocron is very scary to Kanan, and Bindu's like, oh, it's cute. Like I can like make the things turn. Aww,
I'll put this on my charm bracelet. Yeah.
Like why are you scared of this? Like this is like my new nose ring. Sticks in face. See? Like I love it. I love it so much. And I like how the story is about fear of change. I think I get into this more later? No, I get into, hold on, give me a second. I can't remember if I get into this later. I do get into this more. So I'll come back to that. Now, I did mention earlier about how one of the things about reading extra information is like the novels and stuff, how I'm missing these characters now in Rebels. Now, on the reverse, having read the Thrawn novel, like, Thrawn's opening scene has so much more weight to it for me. Because I've read that scene. I've read the Battle of Batoon. And it's tense. And it's heartbreaking. And it's heart-wrenching. And I like that Kallus is the one to bring it up. Because I don't think before the Honorable Ones, Kallus wouldn't have never brought up civilian casualties. I don't think that would have been his character, for one. And so for Kallus, I think because he's gone through that time with Zeb, he's now actually thinking about things like that for the first time. So I think that's a nice note on his part.
Yeah. Well, he's starting to make stank faces in the background too a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean he's always made he's stank faces.
Yeah, that's true.
Quite a few times, and Constantine, but like I don't think he would have brought up civilian casualties before, because we know that he didn't care about that before. He was starving a fucking planet just to catch the rebels. He starved a planet, and but I think now because of the Honorable Ones, he's starting to think about that stuff. And I like that it's Price that answers for the civilian casualties, because she's the one that murdered them all. And Thrawn just looks at her. Like, he doesn't say anything. He just lets her answer, because that bitch killed all that people, and he knows. And I love the scene. Like, this is a scene where the first time I watched it, it was very just like, oh, here's the new villain, here's the thing. But now that I have this extra information, I'm just like, everything has so much more meaning to it. And that's one of the things I really love about this new canon, is how just connected everything is, and how just like, how they reflect on each other, and how like, one thing can just completely change a thing. We were talking about this with Twilight of the Apprentice. When Clone Wars Season 7 comes out, how much is Maul and Ahsoka's fight going to change? And so I love it. I love having all this extra content just like referring back to each other and just like making things better. So when we do revisit media, it has more meaning and different meaning to it. So that's really the point I'm trying to make. I will say I'm not the biggest fan of Thrawn's rebel design. He's a little bit too stylized for me, just a touch. I've seen so much fan art that does him more justice, where his brows aren't sticking out and his like chin, his cheeks aren't as deep and sullen.
And he's probably not wearing a shirt either.
Well, yeah, that too. But I have as my background, like it's almost the exact same, but it's not as deep. And I think Thrawn is just a touch too stylized in the Rebels animation. I'm not a fan of it, but I still like it. I like it better than his EU look, because his EU look is not my fave. And finally, I love the fade to black scene where it's just Thrawn's eyes lingering over the planet in space. I just think that's a really nice scene.
Yep, they're setting him up. Be a badass.
Well,
see
badass
how much
to me.
Of a badass he really is.
Yeah, well, badass to me, not to you. You're not a Thrawn fan. So, well, Act 4. The space kids arrive at the planet with Reclam Station on it. They fly into the clouds and find the station, and the station is already destroying the Y-Wings. Ezra wants to move in now, but all the adults in the back of the Phantom minivan, which is just such a lovely little ship, points out that they're there to scout out the mission. That, and Rex wants to contact Hera first, but Ezra goes into a teenage mode rage and going, I'm the leader, you're gonna listen to me! And Ezra gets up in Rex's face and says, that's an order. and Rex has this look like he's just watched one too many Padawans die, but he gives the okay. And the mood is tense as Sabine takes them in. And when they zoom in, they bump into a dismantler droid that's there to break apart ships to protect the station. And Hondo's like, oh yeah, I probably should have mentioned those a little sooner. Sorry. And hey, remember back to the episode where Rex and Kanan were pretending to be stormtroopers and they had to sneak onto a ship to rescue Ezra and Sato? Do you remember the really blonde, super imperial guy that was there leading the Imperials and he was trying to torture Rex? Do you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's back. That's Bron Titus, and he's been demoted since running the station. He runs a trash station now, so he's back. Titus and his men pick up the rebels hitting the droid, and turns out Governor Price has already warned them about these rebels. Back with the kids, the Phantom is trying to outrun the dismantler droid, and Chopper shoots off any that managed to catch up. And Rex is like, enough of this! Fuck off! And he kicks open the door. And Rex, you are at a ripe old age of 30, old man! Stop doing stupid things! Rex shoots at the droid and almost falls off the Phantom until Zeb grabs his leg. But the Phantom minivan takes a hit and starts to go down. It falls into a storm, having lost all power. But Chopper gets the engines up and running again, and Sabine lands on the station. They watch that the dismantler... They watch that the disassembly line... I didn't know if disassembly was a real word, but it is now. The disassembly line is destroying the wire wings, and they need to shut it down. They get to the end, where they meet a group of Ugnaughts. Ezra. Sweet boy with an I, Ezra. Ezra, sweet baby boy, Ezra! Threatens to hurt the Ugnaughts if they don't move. And Hondo slides in there real fast, and it turns out that he speaks their language, for the most part. And Hondo makes a deal that if the Pikies help them liberate the ships, they will help liberate the Ugnaughts from the Empire. And the Piggy leader hurries out there and shuts down the line to report a malfunction to stall the Empire. Sabine points out that they all need to refuel the ships and rightfully snarks at Ezra. But Rex calms him because complications are normal. And Zeb brings up Kanan and Ezra scowls at them. And they all get started on refueling the Y-Wings.
I only got two notes for this one. I thought the dismantler droids were neat as a just sort of giant version of the buzz droids.
Yeah. In the original trilogy. That's a really good comparison. I didn't think of that.
But now they're just giant versions that humans have to fight instead of these are the more like land-based ones, I guess, atmosphere-based ones, and they're just big and but they still have the same sort of personality, just sort of that same sort of prick personality, like a wasp or something.
Yeah.
And the only other mention is there's a sort of flashback to Star Wars when Han Solo's pretending to be an Imperial officer and talking on the radio to the guy who's like, what's going on up there with the Ugnaught? And he just has to sort of bullshit him.
Yeah. Oh, nothing. Nice day.
He pulls it off more successfully than Han Solo, though. That's all I really got for that part. This part was just all action, pretty much.
I really like how you could actually like hear the word like malfunction. Like he like squeaks out malfunction when he talks.
Yeah.
I really like the Ugnaughts in this. Like, they don't really do a lot, but they're kind of, like, snarky, and I like them. Like, I really like the Ugnaughts in this episode.
Any creature that talks in pig language is endearing.
Yeah, and they're kind of cute, and, like, they're all kind of snarky. I like that about them, so. Like, when Titus is like, get it off, or I'll throw you off the ship, like, the Ugnaught just, like, waves his hand, just like, what the fuck ever, man?
Yeah.
I really like them.
They're all unionized.
Yeah. I love the scene where Ezra is in Rex's face and he gives him an order against everyone else's advice. Like, the one person on that ship who has been in that position before, who has taken orders from a Padawan who is inexperienced and saw people die, is Rex. Like, he knows that. He's been there, he's done that, and probably when he looks at Ezra, he sees Ahsoka in that moment. And there's just so much subtlety going on in that scene, and there's so much history and weight to it. Like, it's not stated. They're like, there's nothing there. Like, Rex Rex just looks very hurt and upset, and he gets very stony face.
Yeah, they just do it all with facial expressions.
And it's so nice because, like, us who have watched the Clone Wars, we've known that position from Rex. You know that when he sees Ezra, he's probably seeing Ahsoka about to go into a terrible mission and about to fail, because he's done that before, and he's seen it. And so, like, that's such a good scene and a good moment for Rex. This is actually a really good Rex episode, actually. This has probably been my favorite, like, character-wise, like, my favorite Rex episode character-wise. Like, this is a really good episode for him. But what I also like is, after, like, Ezra was a little bitch to him on the ship, Rex lets it go. Because, like, not even 10 minutes later, when Sabina's like, "I bet you didn't think about refueling the ships, huh, Ezra?" And she walks off. Ezra looks very, like upset by that. And Rex takes his shoulder and says very gently, "Complications are normal. We'll do this together." And he encourages Ezra. And it just shows, like, how good Rex is. Like, it was water under the bridge. Like, Ezra did this, like, mean word to him, and then 10 minutes later, he's comforting him. And it just shows what a good character Rex is. Like,
also is a good soldier, and he's trying to get the mission done, too, which means keeping Ezra's head on his shoulders.
Yeah, and he's just a really great mentor. Like, Rex is so good in this episode. I love Rex. Maybe it's because they're in clouds and everything is, like, kind of shielded and up close, but the battle with the dismantler droid when they're in the clouds feels just really fast. Like, it feels like they're careening faster than normal. And maybe just because it's so claustrophobic and close because of all they can't see where they're going. But there was just something that just felt like the speed was turned up to, like, 12. And it was just really good. I really like that fight. And I really like how they show how much the holocron has been messing with Ezra. Because Ezra normally is very empathetic and he's kind, and he's willing to trust people, and he's sweet, and he's kind. And when he walks up to those Ugnaughts, and he goes, "I don't want to hurt you," and he scares them, like, that's not Ezra.
He's very Anakin. Remember what a sweet kid Anakin was? And then, like, he was, like, threatening to torture people all the time through Clone Wars.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. I keep, I think back to the Zygarian arc. But yeah, I remember seeing that scene. I was just like, whoa, Ezra, baby boy, take it back three steps. And I'm really glad Hondo was there to slide in right fast, be like, "No, I've seen this before. No." So that's all I have for Act 4. So Act 5?
I'm ready.
Alrighty. Act 5. Bindu is trying to teach Kanan how to see through the Force now that he doesn't have his eyes. He's using cues of the spiders, like sound, the feelings of the spiders, etc., to try and build a picture. Bindu has Kanan recall things like smell and how the spiders used to look back when he had eyes. Bindu keeps asking if the spiders are close, and Kanan keeps saying no. And so Bindu asks if he is certain. Kanan reaches out and feels the spider is like a foot in front of him. And the spider is perfectly calm until Kanan starts to panic. And Kanan wants to run, but he realizes another one has blocked his path from behind. And Bindu is like, "Yeah, you're seeing now, man." And Kanan asks why the spiders aren't attacking. And Bindu says it's not part of their nature. Kanan scoffs at that, only having bad memories of the spiders. Bindu keeps pressing him, and Kanan starts sensing fear, and he thinks of Ezra sensing that his Padawan's in danger. But then when Kanan digs a little deeper, he senses the fear in himself. He realizes that the spiders, and everyone else, sees him in grief, fear, and anger, and he sees himself that way too. He realizes that he cut himself off from the Force, and everyone else, for far too long. It's time to act because the people he loves needs him. Bindu asks about the holocron, and Kanan gives it to him as a gift, which just delights Bindu to no end now that he has a little Rubik's Cube to play with. Back with the space kids, they have the last of the Y-Wings fueling up, but the dismantler droids pick up on them and inform Titus and his men inside. The Imperials lock down the Y-Wings and start the conveyor belt again. Hondo calls to his piggy friends for help, but all the commands are run up in the control area of the station. They all split up to finish getting the Y-Wings ready, and Ezra heads out with Rex to take control of the bridge. But the dismantler droids are back, and one grabs Chopper, deactivates him, and chunks him down to the side. And it starts attacking Sabine, who is full teenage rage and having to put up with Ezra shit all the time. But the droid is too much for her, and Sabine gets knocked off, but Zeb rushes in there and snags her before she plummets to the planet. They climb back up and fight the droid, but even together, Sabine and Zeb are not enough for this thing. So Ezra sends Rex back to help them, because no one knows how to fight droids better than a clone trooper. Ezra runs inside and is fighting stormtroopers when Hera calls in, and he pulls a, "Hey, Mom! Everything is fine, Mom! No need to worry about me, Mom! Bye, Mom!" And Hera and Sato look at each other, knowing better. And Hera goes to the ghost to start it up, because she's gotta go save the space kids, and finds Kanan waiting for her in the cockpit, ready to go. She smiles and says it's good to have him back, and you'd totally know that they're gonna fuck later. Back with Sabine and Zeb hanging off the side of the ship to their death, Rex runs in there and grabs the crane, and he whips it around, smacking the droid left and right, going, "Fuck off, you lazy clanker!" And when the droids whip out a flamethrower, well, that pisses Rex off more than anything else, and he beats the shit out of the droid with a crane because Rex is the best! And then he goes and he rescues Sabine and Zeb. And then I'm gonna cut it there because there's only 10 minutes left in the episode.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about this one, except it, like, Rex is just extra good at beating the shit out of robots. He's got the most, like, that's what he's best just had the most experience with. But man, Bendu is just like a painting come to life. He's just the coolest thing. And like, yeah, I love how he's so happy, and he's at, I don't know if he's happy that he got the holocron, or he's just happy that he could actually be surprised by somebody doing something.
Yeah,
because he seems totally like that got him totally by surprise, and that's not something maybe a Bendu would be used to. But either way, it was great. Just the look on his face and the subtle, you know, chuckle he does. It's a great scene. That's all I really got for that.
My first note is, motherfucking Rex, man. He's just the best. For Ezra, because my other two notes are like Kanan notes and they're kind of longer. I like how as things keep escalating, Ezra gets... It's very slight, but each time something escalates, like, he didn't think of the fuel, and now the ships are locked down. I don't want to say manic, because I still don't think that's the best word, but he started kind of panicking a little bit more, to the point where he's like, "It's under control. I got this. It's going to be okay. And then Hera calls, and he's like, "It's okay. It's fine, Mom. I'm fine. I can do this. Don't worry about it, Mom." So I like that there's kind of, like, steps up. Like, every time, like, they run into a new bump, like, Ezra just gets a little bit more... kind of more like, "Oh God, it's happening." And I like that kind of step up to get to Act 6, which we'll get to in a minute. I love the scene where Kanan is learning to see, quote unquote, see from the Bendu. Because I don't remember which Rebels, it was the Rebels Recon for Twilight of the Apprentice. They talked about how one of Kanan's very base first things he learns, and we saw this in the prequel, was when all the younglings had their eyes covered and they were holding lightsabers and they were learning how to deflect without their sight. So, like, this is a base function that Kanan has. Like, he knows how to see without the force, like, with the force and not have his eyes. But he's just so traumatized by everything. He's traumatized by stuff like Order 66. And he's traumatized from the stuff on Malachor. And he's blaming himself that he's just lost those base teachings that he learned when he was a child. So I really like this scene with Bendu, because that's probably kind of what he used to do when he was a youngling in the temple. That's probably how he learned, was like...
Yeah. The Bendu really didn't have to teach him anything. He just walked him through it. He just, forced him to do it, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of like riding a bike. Like, it's his fear that he had to overcome. And because, like, I'm sure that's how he learned in the temple. Like, you know, the kids were like, "We can't see!" And Yoda's like, "Use your ears!" Or, like, feel the ground, you know? Like, this is something he's done before. And I think it's because this is a very important lesson. And I think, to me, like, this is the lesson of the episode. And I was this moment. Just because you have one bad experience doesn't mean that all experiences are going to be bad, which he learned through the spiders. Kanan only knew bad things about these spiders, and he's expecting those bad things to happen. But now they're not bothering him. Like, they didn't bother him until he started panicking. Like, they were just like, cool, it's a dude, it's fine. And it's a different kind of experience that he has to learn, that they're not these, like, evil creatures that are, like, bloodthirsty and going to kill them. And I think that's a very important lesson. We all have bad experiences. Like, let me use one, for example, flying. I hate flying. I don't like flying. And so when I have to fly, it's very scary for me. But it's a thing, like, just because I hate flying, if I have to fly again, I know I'm going to probably be okay, but I just don't like flying. But I know when I fly that I'll probably be okay, even though I'm panicking the entire time that I'm on a plane. So, like, just because, like, we have these bad experiences doesn't mean that, like, every experience is going to be like that one. And I think that's a very, very important lesson to learn when people have gone through trauma. You know, to use another example, I have a past with abusive relationships. I went through two boyfriends that were absolutely horrific to me. And it took me a long time to get over that. Like, I still have those scars nowadays, and I still get kind of more, I'm more wary of people now, but I'm also very aware that, like, new people that I meet now are not those people. I had to learn how to get past that, that every person that I'm with is not going to be those two people. And I've been with people since, but it's hard to overcome those kind of traumas. And I think that's a very, very important lesson to this episode. And I think it's also done really well too with the metaphor of the spiders. So, yeah.
And they had to deal, you know, they had to deal with Kanan's eyes too from the last episode. So it's just perfect story element.
And I think it's nice for it that we'll see an act sit in the last act with Ezra and Kanan too, because, like, Ezra has this with Kanan too. Like, the last 6 months, all of his experiences with Kanan have been bad. You know, like, well, we can assume that most of them have been bad, which is why they're in this place to begin with. And so, like, we'll see in a minute that Ezra's going to have that breakdown moment where he's just like, I need Kanan, but he's been this terrible, like, master to me, and he hasn't been there for me. And then Kanan shows up, and it's Ezra's moment to go, my past experiences with Kanan are now different. It's not what it used to be. He's here now. So I think it's a very important lesson for both of them and to teach people, because it's a good lesson to have. So that's all I have for Act 5.
Act 6.
You want to wrap up the puppy?
Let's do it.
Wrap this puppy up. Act 6. Ezra takes care of the stormtroopers inside the hangar bay when Hondo and his pig friends show up. And Hondo goes, we'll, quote-unquote, watch the shuttle for Ezra in case we all need a quick escape. And Ezra's like, thanks, guys. I'm sure you won't backstab me to save your own skins. And Ezra goes on ahead to the control room. Titus is talking to my lovely bitch, Governor Price, trying to assure her that he has everything under control. And Price is on her way with reinforcements and hangs up with him. Ezra comes in there and takes out the guards. And Titus sees him and goes, oh my god, you're the kid. You're the kid that Callus told me that I should drug, handcuff, and put 50 guards around you. Damn it, why didn't I listen to Callus in season 2? And Summer Callus is just like, haha, I know, bitch. And Ezra quickly disarms him and asks nicely for Titus to unlock the bombers. But Titus has already sabotaged the station. The only way to free the Y-Wings is to cut the power to the entire station. And Ezra's like, okay! And he slices through the power, forcing Titus to call for an abandoned ship. Ezra calls down and tells them to get in the Y-Wings and fly them out of there with Chopper controlling the rest of the ship. Ezra is going to take the wonderfully lovely Phantom minivan. God, I love the Phantom minivan. The Phantom is just so good. Chopper doesn't like this plan at all, because, friendly reminder, it was a Y-Wing that Chopper crashed in and lost his first pilot back during the Clone Wars. But Zeb forces him to get into a ship anyway. Ezra sees Hondo flying off without him, and Ezra's like, yeah, that's on brand for Hondo, I'm not mad. And he runs out of there. Once Sabine and the crew get in the Y-Wings and get up in the air, and they get up into space, they find out that the hyperdrives have been removed from all the ship. And they're stuck there. And uh-oh, there's Governor Price's Star Destroyer ready to meet them. Sabine calls out to Ezra for help, but Ezra is quickly losing control of the mission. And Ezra has his own problems. The station is falling, and parts fall off, and it knocks the Phantom minivan off the station, where it goes down into the storm, and it explodes from lightning. And Ezra's like, oh shit, I lost the car! Oh god! Rest in peace, Phantom minivan. You're gonna be missed. I'm so proud of my nickname, the Phantom Mini. Actually, funny thing, sorry, total side note. When I was going through the extra information notes, the destruction of the Phantom was suggested by a writer. And after that, they called that writer the Phantom Menace for destroying the Phantom. So that was the writer's nickname for who suggested destroying the Phantom. And so
that makes sense.
I thought it was really funny because I did not know that when I came up with the nickname the Phantom Minivan. I didn't know that. And so when I saw that in the extra episode notes, I was just like, that's hilarious that I was very close to that. So anyway, finally, Ezra breaks down. There's no more bravado. There's no more anger. There's no more power. Ezra is just very, very scared. And he calls out to Kanan. Up in space, it's looking real bad for Sabine's crew. Luckily, the part of the Rebel fleet arrives. Hera zooms in, taking out TIE fighters that would dare hurt her space children. And Sabine lets her know that Ezra's still down on the planet. And it's space parents to the rescue. They are a go. And they fly down there to go get their son. And Ezra is curled up in a fetal position and very upset about his coming demise. And the station is plummeting, and Ezra is holding on for dear life. Hera pulls up beside the station, and Kanan runs down, opens the door, and reaches out for his space son. Ezra and Kanan let go of their past hurt. They reach out for each other, and Kanan pulls him to safety. Back with the Imperials, Kallus phones in Thrawn, and Thrawn's like, hey guys, was I right? They went for the Y-Wings, didn't they? I was right, wasn't I? Fuck all y'all, you guys are humans, and you're stupid. I was right. And Price is very smug because she thinks she's won the day. And she's like, Grand Admiral, I found the Rebel fleet. And Thrawn looks at it and goes, those little ships? That's not the Rebel fleet. Just break off the attack. Let them go so they can lead us in the future to the Rebel fleet. And Admiral Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name, is like, bah, 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 angry British sounds. He makes angry British sounds, and he goes, no, we are not calling off the attack, no. And Thrawn is like, jeezy crazy. This is why I should have kept Eli Banto around, because you humans are stupid, and you don't follow orders. And Price calms down all the panties, and she calls off the attack. On the ghost, Space Mom does not want to hear any excuses from her space son. And Hera gives the okay to Sato, and everyone jumps to hyperspace. Back on Chopper Base, Ezra is trying to sway things into his direction, but Hera is very upset. She is happy that they're all alive in one piece, but he went off the mission. She suspends his command and he just got this episode, so that didn't last too long. Zeb pulls in, I am Spartacus! Because he explains that they should all be suspended then. They all went all along with Ezra's plans. But Hera shuts that down real fast. At least they got the Y-Wings, which are going to General Dodata. Later, Ezra and Kanan finally have their first real talk in probably 6 months. Ezra apologizes for using the Sith holocron, and then, like an addict, or a golem as you pointed out earlier, he asks where the holocron is. And Kanan's like, well, I don't know, probably with a Bindu playing with it like a Rubik's Cubes. And Kanan tells him to drop it. Thanking Kanan for coming back to him, Kanan says that he will always come back for Ezra. You know, until season 4 when Kanan gets blown up! The feels! The end! What'd you have for F4?
Even so, Kanan's sort of being a little, not dishonest, but just being like, oh, it's safe. But Ezra, for an addict, he takes the fact that the holocron is gone pretty well. He's just like, oh, okay, that's good. So that was just a little brief, but whatever. It's a 22-minute show. Well,
you know, 46-minute show. I can't remember because it's been a hot minute since I watched the beginning of season 3. Does this drop Ezra's whole like dark sideness for the rest of the season? I think that storyline gets ended here, right? Like he doesn't
for
go
the
back
most
into
part.
Blackberry.
Whenever they give up on the Ezra might fall to the dark side, they just like drop it. So it might be after this one. It's soon, though.
Yeah, because I know it's not end of season three, but it's been so long since I've watched the beginning of season three.
Because they went hot and heavy into it, and then they just stopped. So
I've rewatched all the Thrawn episodes, but I haven't rewatched, like, next week is Holocron of Fates, where Maul comes back, and I just can't remember if Thrawn goes black, or not Thrawn, if Ezra goes Blackberry in that episode. And if it does drop, I kind of find that a little bit of a fault, because I'd rather see Ezra struggling with it throughout the season, because they teased it so heavily. Like, they were like, he's going to use the darkness, and blah, blah, blah. So I would almost like them to have it at least be a thread a little bit longer, just to show, like, him readjusting to the light side. I think that would be very nice, because to me, like, that's kind of a fault.
I don't know. I think it's harder to fall to the dark side in the new... in the new Force sort of way, like the Ezra and Rey both like can dive right, could sort of dive right into the dark side because they're confident. Like, you know, you almost have to be like really in bad psychological shape, like Kylo Ren.
It's like Kylo and Vader, genocide or
right. Something. Ezra does not have a lot of anger, pain, hate, and jealousy going on. He's a little more aware. He's, you know, he's like Anakin, whereas he's in puberty, but Anakin just sort of stayed in puberty. So, you know, I don't think like it's as the fear of Ezra falling to the dark side. This is of course with the perspective of already seeing the whole season. At this point, when I was watching it the first time, I was like, yeah, you could totally go to, you know, that might be the story element they're going to, or have him in some future story or something.
You know, the more I think about it, like, with Ezra and Rey, they both lived very hard lives. Ezra was an orphan very young. He's had a very hard life. Rey was an orphan very young, and she's lived a very hard life on Jakku. So, like, to them, like, hardships is normal. It's just part of life. But then you look at someone like Kylo Ren and Anakin. Anakin was raised in the Jedi Temple, which is, while like it's like, you know, pretty much a cult and very monkish and church-like, it's very
Anakin held his dead mom's body in his arms, though, too.
Let me finish. But Anakin's life in the Jedi Temple is relatively cushy. You know, he has everything given to him. He has a very cushy life, and it's fine. And with Kylo, I haven't read it, but I think it's in the book Bloodlines. Like, it talks about how he's a prince. Like, he's considered a prince. He's the Prince of Alderaan. That's not there anymore. Like, and he's treated like a prince. He has this very cushy life. And I almost consider it like a story of almost privilege. Like, these two characters, like, Anakin and Kylo are relatively privileged characters. They have relatively, like, cushy lives. And they snap when they don't get their way. You know, opposed to someone
well,
like Rey.
Well, Anakin also, but I mean, Anakin started as a slave and then had his mother, you know, so he had a little more, you know, push into that area.
And
but
I will give
but
you that.
But Kylo could have psychological, you know, a chemical imbalance.
I will totally give you that one. But like, Ezra and Rey have, like, had a constantly hard life. Like, Kylo and Anakin have had traumatic things happen. I don't like comparing traumas, though. But to me, like, I think Ezra and Rey have a lot more in common to where, like... Like you said, like, where they can just touch on the dark side and they come back. That's no problem. But it's a harder thing for, like, Anakin and Kylo, who... touch on the dark side and they just slide into it.
Yeah, they're all ready for it. Yeah, fits like a glove.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's very a point that's kind of interesting of how similar. I never really thought about how similar Rey and Ezra's upbringing were. Because that does make sense that he can touch on the dark side and just come right back.
Yeah.
No problem. A lot like Rey. I never thought about that before.
But my only other notes are this is Ezra's first fuck up. And that's good.
He's fucked up before.
Yeah, but this was almost a just terrible bungle. It wasn't a total loss, but they did lose. He did lose the minivan, and they just got a few ships. You know, like four ships.
I have whatever that
chopper flew Bluetooth style back. I love the shout out to Dodonna, of course. I mentioned that earlier. And I thought the rescue of Ezra, going to him calling out, them going to rescue him, and him clinging to the bottom was very much like the Luke getting rescued from Cloud City in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a lot more dramatic. But yeah, I guess it was a lot more dramatic. But it was sort of the same general idea.
Is that it for your notes?
That's it for me.
I actually want to touch on one of your notes, because I kind of have a rebuttal to it, because you were talking about how, like, this was a fuck-up and they only got 4 ships from it. I love the line that Arinda says, where she says, "The rebels fight so hard to gain so little." And I think that's a really interesting line, because that, to me, summarizes the difference between the Empire versus the rebels. To the Empire, these Y-Wings are trash. There's only, like, they only get, like, 4 of them. Like, it's trash. Like, she doesn't understand it. But to the Rebels, this is a little step. These Y-Wings are so important to them. And it's where to the Empire, they're trash. This is a step. This is a step to the Rebels for something bigger. Like, this is their next step. And I think that's the difference between, like, the Empire has all these resources, but, like, the Rebels have to gain just a little bit at a time. And I just think that line is so interesting, because it's not just 4 little ships. It's this is the step to build a strike force. The strike force then takes Lothal. Then Lothal gets liberated. And then, like, that's the snowball that, like, makes the thing roll. And so, like, I love that line from Arinda, because the Empire just doesn't get it, like, why these ships are so important. And
his mission is successful, and they also help blow up the Death Star eventually, so that's good. But I mean, to Ezra, like, from Ezra's point of view, it's his first command, you know, and at the end of his first mission, everything goes foobar, and he's clinging to the bottom of a dropping gas station as it falls through the atmosphere, pretty much figuring he's gonna die up until the last second. So
yeah.
You know, it was, and he was going in like, I'm gonna, you know, and he's been doing good so far. So he was getting cocky, and he's been messing with a little dark side stuff to give him an added advantage. And he was probably feeling pretty invincible. And this took a little bit of wind out of his sails on that, at least.
Yeah. So, for my notes, I love when Ezra first walks into the bridge and he just automatically kills two stormtroopers. Because you see in the background, the other bridge officers just kind of slink to the wall and just slide out.
The smarter bridge officers, yeah.
It's so funny. I never noticed it before, but, like, one just, like, slinks on the wall and just, like, slides out of there. I was like, these Imperials are smart. Titus, you should have listened to Callus in season 2. You should have listened to Callus. He was right. I think I would love a scene, because, like, you know, Bron Titus probably had to get rescued by Arinda's ship, because it's the closest Star Destroyer. So, like, when they all got on their escape pods and got up to Arinda's ship, I just love the idea of, like, Titus, like, getting off his escape pod and, like, stepping off, and there's Callus just, like, right there smiling at him, just being like, hey! Ezra did it again, didn't he? And Ty's just being like, shut up, Callus, I don't like you. I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it. I'm so upset that the Phantom is gone. I love the Phantom. It's such a cute little ship. I love the Phantom so much. It hurts my feelings. I love the little nod to Chopper's past. I actually had forgotten that it was a Y-Wing that Chopper had originally crashed in. And it's just a nice touch that, like, Chopper didn't want to fly in a Y-Wing again. And because I had to look it up, I was like, why is Chopper so upset? And then it clicked. I was like, didn't he crash in a Y-Wing? And I had to look it up, and I was like, yeah, like, he lost his first pilot in the Clone Wars in a Y-Wing. And so I think that's a really nice little moment, which could be played totally as comedic, but that's a nice little moment for Chopper right there. I love the moment where Ezra finally drops, like, the bravado and the ruse at the end of the episode and admits that he's just scared and he needs Kanan. that's such a good moment of like Ezra coming back to himself, and that's the Ezra we know and love. And I love that moment where he's just like, Kanan, I need you. Like, that's just such a really good moment. The image of the station falling, and Ezra's holding on, and Kanan is there, and he's reaching out to him in the light, is so poetic, because Ezra in that scene is in darkness, and he's in shadow, and he's in all this smoke, and there's Kanan, who is standing in the light side. It's just so symbolic. He's standing in the light, reaching for his Padawan in the darkness, and it's just a very beautiful scene. There's so much like weight to that scene. There's a lot of connotation. And I just think that's one of the most symbolic episodes of all, like, images of all of Rebels, of Ezra in smoke and shadow and Kanan standing in the light, reaching out for him. It's just really nice. It's really nicely done. Might be a touch a little on the nose, but I don't care. I love it. I'm actually surprised you didn't pick that out, Mr. Visual Man.
No, I was too busy picking out the similarities to Cloud City.
That's true. I just love Thrawn's theme. I love his theme music. I love the organ. The organ is just such... You don't always hear organs. Like, usually when you hear organs, it's usually very churchy, you know?
Yeah, but it's not an orchestra instrument.
Yeah, very much so.
Usually.
And so whenever I hear Thrawn's organ, I actually think of Ganondorf from The Legend of Zelda. I always think of him in Ocarina of Time, where he's playing the organ at the end. And
it's a solo,
or like,
instrument.
Yeah, or like Dracula. Like, there's very specific times where like organs are used for villains. And I think it's such a nice, very classic instrument to be part of Thrawn's theme. And which is kind of nice, because he's a classic EU character. I love it. All right, I want to talk about Thrawn for a second, though. You know, going into this season, this episode was my first introduction to Thrawn. Before this episode came out, I knew roughly who Thrawn was before this. I knew he was an EU character. I knew he was a Chiss. I kind of sort of knew who Thrawn was, but I never, like, experienced Thrawn before. And so... when I first watched this episode, I was like, ooh, he's cool. He has cool music. He looks cool. This is my first intro to this character that everybody loves. Okay, cool. Okay, I see this. This is cool. Now, on a rewatch, though, I wish they just did a touch more with Thrawn in the episode.
They were trying to be mysterious and foreboding with him and show as little as possible and just have him
be a badass. Let me finish my explanation. Because this is his big introduction from Legends into canon. This is supposed to be like his big intro. Like, he is now in canon. They've been wanting to use this character. He's this powerhouse character. And he's only in two scenes. Like, he doesn't really do anything in either scenes. So I would almost either want to add a scene with him, just something little to kind of give him just a little bit more of an intro. Or have him at least be physically there in person at the end. Like, having him there with Arendo, watching the battle, having him dictate the battle, just to give him that, like, little bit more oomph. Because now I know the character. Like, I know who he is now. I know how he acts. And so, like, now rewatching this, like, me as a person who didn't know Thrawn before, I was like, he's kind of cool, but it's not making me want to delve into him. What made me delve into Thrawn was the rest of the season as I got to him more. So I wish to introduce, like, this huge Legends character. They just used him, like, a little bit more, which I actually feel like is a little bit of a fault of the episode. Okay,
they did the same thing with Vader when they started this one season with just one little clip of him, you know, in space.
But Vader and Thrawn are two very different characters. Like, this is his first on-screen appearance. Like, Vader has been in the franchise forever. So, like, everybody knows who Vader is, but not everybody knows who Thrawn is.
But they're trying to build him as a similarly, like, really, like, viable and threatening presence. So, I think they were just trying... They wanted to do the leave them wanting more, you know?
I was left.
Which
leaving.
They apparently did.
I felt like on this rewatch, like now that I know everything, like it's not a leave them wanting more. It's a leave them not really getting enough. And I'm not asking for like the whole episode to be about Thrawn.
That's the same thing.
Well, I'm not asking for the entire episode to be about Thrawn. I'm asking for like just either sure. an extra scene or having him be there in person at the end. Because can you imagine how different it would be like if he was there physically in person watching the battle, dictating
your husband? No.
I'm talking narratively, like not Phantom. Phantoms mm-hmm. they're not here right now. I'm talking narratively about the episode. Like, Chris, I'm trying to make a serious point. Shut the fuck up, Chris. I'm trying to make a serious point here. Like, narratively, it doesn't work. Like, it's not a good intro to Thrawn. It's not a good intro at all. Like, it's not. And I kind of wish if he was there physically at the end, they would at least be able to show what he can do. Because, like, right now, he's just kind of like the blue guy who's kind of scary. But if he was there physically at the end, you could have at least had a 10-second scene of like him directing the battle, and it would actually give a little bit more oomph to his introduction.
As we go on, I think I don't know if they really like handled the character of Thrawn as well as they could have handled him either, but that'll progress as we go on. But yeah, don't know. Yeah, I don't know if they from the start.
Yeah, for just having such, like, his first on-screen appearance and such a big powerhouse Legends character coming into the EU, I just wish it had just a little bit more oomph to it, because to me it just doesn't have the oomph. He gets his oomph later. Like, Hera's Heroes, that is oomph. That is nothing but oomph. That is Thrawn oomph. There's so much oomph. All the oomph. Oomph, 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 oomph. But, like, I don't think it's a good introduction for him. I really don't. Like, now revisiting it, I just don't. What do you think about the season opener compared to others?
It's not bad. It's not the greatest season opener, but, you know, come on. It's still good. It does what it has to do. I'll get more into it in my scoring up. We're getting very close to my scoring up statement.
I kind of feel the same way. Like, this is a fine episode, but it doesn't feel anything different than some of the other episodes. Siege of Lothal is such a powerhouse, you know? It is a powerhouse episode. And the Sparks of Rebellion, the very first episode, is a powerhouse. And the season 4 episode, which is the I can't remember the title, but it's the Mandalorian one, that's a powerhouse. But
this is a mover along episode.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. I feel like it's just a lot of setup and just kind of emotions. Like, we set up all these emotions from... I guess I don't feel like they had to cram everything into one episode. Like, I feel like they're like, we have all these stakes after Twilight, and now we fixed them all. Let's move forward.
They crammed them into two episodes, really.
Yeah, and so, like, I like this episode. And don't get me wrong, I like this episode a lot. But to me, this is the worst of the 4 season openers. And by worst, I mean, like, it's chocolate compared to fudge. It's still really good. But I just don't think it's hard to follow.
I'm
going to
say chocolate compared to dark chocolate, because I don't like fudge. So
I mean it's just comparing chocolates, so it's an M&M compared to like a dark chocolate bar. So delicious. M&M's are delicious.
It's a Kit Kat, American Kit Kat compared to a European Kit Kat.
Well, that's all I had. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
Score it up, Chris.
I was gonna give it an 8.5, but I actually bumped it up to a 9. Only because it introduces the Bendu. Because I love, love, love the Bendu. I'm just happy whenever I see him. And now that when they start, and just on top of it, that he's my favorite Doctor Who is, and my favorite Doctor Who is now a Force creature. So that just bumps it up to a 9, almost despite it being one, like you said, one of the weaker season openers. But Bendu always makes it better, so 9 out of 10.
Wow, we almost matched up because I have an 8.5.
Yeah, that's what I. That's. I mean, that's what I think it. That's what I really deserve it. But I gotta give it points for bringing the Bendu into the story because I love him.
For me, this is not my favorite season opener, like you just said. But there's still so many good things in this episode. Ezra is a bit borderline teen, but it's written so well and it's justified within the episode that it never crosses that line.
And he's a teen.
Yeah. And we never really talked too much about Hondo. Hondo is just great in this episode. Hondo does Hondo things, and when Hondo's here, it's fun. Like, Hondo's just a great character. We get the introduction of two of my favorite characters in Rebels, Arinda Price and my blue husband, Othron. Bindu is awesome, and he's such a great character. And I really love Rex in this episode. Like, the more and more I thought about it, like, Rex is the MVP. Like, he is the reason that shit gets done. Yeah. And this is a really, really good Rex episode with a lot of weight to it.
Well, like, while everybody else's has a lot of emotional shit going on, Rex is just there to hold down the fort physically.
Yeah, but there's also just so much emotional weight from Clone Wars. Like, having watched Clone Wars, like, you know those little looks. Like, when Ezra orders him and that look that Rex gives him. Like, that's a memory of Clone Wars. And it just gives weight to it. And I really love Kanan's story. Like, actually, Kanan and Bindu is what makes this episode so great for me. I love their story. Kanan's lesson is really touching, and it's very important. It's a very important lesson. And it's a fine opener, but it's not my favorite. So I gave it an 8.5 out of 10. It's still great. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
This is a beautiful episode. It's gorgeous. So, sorry I told you to shut the fuck up, but you wouldn't let me finish my point.
That's what I do.
I know, I love you.
Or don't do.
It's fine. I don't get to use the shut the fuck up, Chris, rule very often, but when I do, it's just because I'm trying to finish a point and you're using Yoda noises at me. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Facebook page. By the way, you guys, when I say, if you're new to Rebels, I think this is the first time I've used the shut the fuck up during our Rebels coverage. It's not to hurt Chris. It's a shut up for a second so I can finish my point. Like, and it's not anything like that's angry between us. It's a
I made up the rules, so there you go.
Yeah, so I think this is the first time I've used that on you in Rebels. It's a rule of the show. It does not hurt Chris's feelings. It's just so I can finish.
I forgot
finish
you
point.
Even used it.
So,
I forget like yeah, 2 seconds afterwards. Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's the rule of our show. It's fine.
Just speeds up and rolls off.
Yeah. But this week, our feedback comes from the Facebook, comes from Facebook and from Twitter. We had one from Twitter for our episode, Homecoming. Take it away, Chris.
All right. The first one we got here is from Paul C. Kelly. Oh, yeah. And he said, what I liked most about this episode was how crafty the Rebels were in this mission. Ooh. I got a kick out of Kanan impersonating an Imperial and Hera really crashing the tie to make it look real. And then Sabine setting the TIE bomber later on in the episode rigged with explosives. Kanan and Ezra force pushing through blast doors. Also great.
Ooh, yeah.
And from Twitter, somebody who, S.W. Sondheimer, says Kanan meeting the father-in-law was, oh, chef kiss. Mwah.
Mwah. I agree. The best scene of that entire episode is like Kanan just being like, do I smell nice, Ezra? I'm about to meet my father-in-law. How do I look? Is my hair nice? Don't touch me. Don't be hit. Stand up straight. Like, that is the best moment. I had forgotten about that scene, and it's so fucking funny. Well, candy. Oh, where did I put my little note? So if you don't know what we're doing... Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's weird. And our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Dario is Chris's co-podcaster from Eat It and Beat It. And we love Dario. Thank you so much. And this week we have the Oreo Barra Crujiente.
Crujiente.
Crujiente. From Brazil. I'm sorry. I don't know how to speak Portuguese. But I do know that the language of Brazil is Portuguese.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure a lot of people think it's Spanish. Get educated.
And so, I know the language of love is Brazilian.
I love white chocolate, and I love Oreos, and I love crispy shit like this. I've had such a sweet tooth lately. Like, it's been crazy. Like, the last week I've had a hell of a sweet tooth. Mm. And I don't actually usually eat that much sugar, so I'm going to eat the hell out of this.
Well, I'm not a fan of white chocolate, but when you take white chocolate and crunch up chocolate parts of Oreos in it, it basically just tastes like an Oreo. It tastes like the filling of... It tastes like they took the filling of the Oreo, made it hard like chocolate, and just filled it with Oreo cookie crumbs. It's delicious.
You know what this tastes like? It tastes like the American version of the Oreo Crunch bars, only with slightly richer chocolate. The chocolate is slightly more rich, but it tastes almost exactly the same as the American one, but it's so good. I love white chocolate. Like, it's actually one of my favorites, so I'm just like, oh, fucking white chocolate.
Candy bars are so tiny in other countries too compared to our candy bar. Like,
yeah.
The American version of this would be like three times the size of this.
It is. It's like a full-size candy bar. Well, thank you, Dario. We love you. Thank you so much. Well, that's all I have, Chris. I'm gonna finish eating this, so where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our podcast, where you'll find a list of all of our many, 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 many podcasts and all their episodes. You can sign up for any of the individual shows' RSS feeds there, or all of them on our main feed. Or you can sign up for us on through iTunes. You can also see all our shows posted on the Two True Freaks podcast page on Facebook. And go for chit-chat on the Two True Freaks Cantina. But if you're a Twitter person, you can follow our progress on Twitter. And our Twitter feed is run by the inimitable Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
Ooh, a classic.
You don't know, like, you don't know the desperate attempt I had. I was, like, trying to scrape chocolate off my teeth. I was just like, I can't talk.
Do the old reliable. Mm-hmm. Old reliable.
I was just
and,
like, I can't talk right
basically,
now. I've shit in my mouth. I'm eating stuff. Gene.
Yeah, that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JS and Jedi. I run our Twitter accounts. You can also find me on Twitter at Hope Mullinax. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. And actually, I'm doing something a little bit different. I'm doing a little bit something different with Geeky Girl Experience. I used to do my instant GIF reactions of Resistance over on Tumblr. But Tumblr's just been really buggy lately. When I was trying to do my instant reaction for the new episode of Resistance last night, I was having to upload one GIF at a time, save it, close the browser, open the browser, open up Tumblr, go into the drafts to upload the next GIF. Like, it was just being so buggy. So I think I'm going to move my instant reactions over to Geeky Girl Experience and promote them there, because I was like, why not just put content on my website? Because I'm doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go over to there and see all my stuff. I actually, right before the show, I wrote a blog about Toro Doza from Resistance, because I'm just constantly impressed with how mature this character is. She's a 15-year-old girl, and she just handles so much shit really well. So you can see all my writing over there. I also am a fanfic writer. My stuff is over on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia. My main fanfiction is a blue husbando fic called Forces of Gravity with Thrawn. And I also have a side fic called The Lucky Leku with Agent Callus. So you can find all those over on Archive of Our Own. I think Maul's back next week, right?
I honestly
don't remember... Let's see, steps into, I mean, do it in the web browser. Steps into Shadow. Hey, look at that. It's right there. Yeah, I think Maul's back next week. I really don't remember much about Holocrons of Fate other than Maul's in it. That's all I remember about this episode. So I actually like that, like, when I don't remember episodes, because then it's like watching them for the first time again. So,
at least for the first few minutes when you go like, oh yeah, I remember this one.
Well, I kind of remember, like, Maul is there and I think he gets the ghost crew, and Kanan and Ezra are just like, oh fuck, Maul has the ghost crew. And then Maul's like, hello, princess, open this holocron. And he's like, okay. And then there's a bright light, and Kanan's just like, I can see through the force and save my Padawan. And Maul's like, oh fuck, I'm a cockroach, and I run away. I think that's how the episode goes. I don't remember. But I feel like I'm pretty darn
speaking of
pissed.
A cockroach running away, I miss my Grievy.
Oh,
maybe in yeah. Clone Wars Season 7, I'll get some more Grievy. Oh, please.
Yeah. Come all back right. next week to see if I'm right, because
our
I
first
think
normal
that's...
length show probably in almost a month.
Yeah. I think that's the plot of Holocrons of Fate. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. Dumbass. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
The tears, the guy rings it. Wait a minute. I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.